The Ticket.
Michigan Insider Podcast is brought to you in part by defense attorney and WTKA legal insider Joe Simon. Find Joe at themichigandefenders.com.
And we are back here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the county. And before we get to chatting with our guy for the, inside the huddle segment, chatting with our guy Mike Spath, let me get you ready for your Lions football action. That's right. Look, man. Lions took the L in week one. They showed some fight. They showed some intensity. They showed some buy-in to Dan Campbell. And they look better than the Packers. So there you go, right? So time to head on down to the next Lions game. And the great thing about the heading down to Detroit, heading down to Ford Field to take in the Lions game is the party beforehand. And there is no party better than the Lions VIP tailgate brought to you by BullseyeEventGroup.com. Now, this tailgate, I can say without question, is the best tailgate around. Look no further than the menu, which is available to you for 3 hours, three full hours, all you can eat up leading up to the game. All you can eat and drink leading up to the game, courtesy of BullseyeEventGroup.com. A ticket gets you that, all you can eat and drink. And the menu consists of, just to break it down for you, you got short rib steaks, mac and cheese. You got, by the way, those ribs are braised in red wine. You also have the gourmet waffle bar, the farmer's market salads, the gourmet cheeseburgers. I can go on and on and on. The 12-hour pulled pork, the twice-cooked chicken wings. Menu provided for you by celebrity chef Aaron May and Detroit's own Kate Williams. An outstanding, outstanding menu for you. And then, you look around. You're hanging out with Lions fans. All the things that you do pregame at a tailgate. But most tailgates, in addition to not having that menu, they don't have the Xbox gaming stations like the Lions VIP tailgate does. So again, folks, you want to party, right? Go to BullseyeEventGroup.com. Get your ticket to the Lions VIP tailgate. You can also get that package with ticket to the game, ticket to the tailgate. Your whole day is accounted for. It's located at the old Punch Bowl Social Building, which is 3.5 blocks away from Ford Field, less than a 3-minute walk. That's 1331 Broadway Street. Lions VIP tailgate brought to you by BullseyeEventGroup.com. Be sure to check it out. With that, let's get to our guest. And, look, it'll be interesting to get the perspective of a guy who's covered the team, saw it from a media perspective, and then a fan who might be identified with what some fans are saying about Michigan's 31-10 victory over Washington. Joining us as he does every Wednesday, it's our guy Mike Spath for Inside the Huddle. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. But it's morning time here, 7 a.m., and you made my mouth water with the idea of a gourmet waffle bar at the Lions pregame tailgate. If anybody knows me, I am a huge waffle connoisseur, and now I can't think of anything else but this damn waffle bar that you mentioned, Sam. So thank you.
Mission accomplished.
So excited, and but now I have no recourse. It's not like the waffle bar is open to me right now. So,
right.
I guess we'll see you Sunday next Sunday at Ford Field.
Right.
Oh, well, they're in Green Bay this week, right?
Right. So next Sunday, we have to wait.
Yeah, it's before every Lions home game. I hope people understood that, before every Lions home game, not when they're on the road, But
well, I'm going to come to WTKA tomorrow, and I'm expecting a gourmet waffle bar presented by Sam to me.
I hear you. Well, Mike, definitely coming off of that game, the atmosphere was, for people who were in the stands, they say it was unreal. It was like, is this really a Michigan crowd? Michigan fans get it in under the lights. The excitement and enthusiasm in the crowd was not the same as the excitement and enthusiasm after the game for some in the fan base. I my experience has been maybe a 60-40 split. 60% of the fans saying, hell yeah, we won. 40% of the fans saying, ah, man, we got problems. Where do you fall in that mix? Are you to the point in your fandom where you where style points diminish a victory, diminish your celebratory mood?
Well, Sam, I disagree with the idea that it's style points or it wasn't sexy enough. Those are two terms that I've heard referred by fans, by members of the media this week. Like, we can't be mad at Michigan because of style points. It's not about style points. It's about preparing yourself to be able to take on different types of competition. You know, and when I look at it, yeah, you know, we can certainly talk about the lack of a passing game. I really do believe that that was a miss in this game, that they didn't throw the ball more for a variety of reasons, and let's definitely talk about that. But for a second, let me just be a fan, and let me just be someone who is trying to have a different perspective on this 2021 football season. And that person sat there on Saturday night and watched two great running backs who I've been a huge fan of. I mentioned on the show before, no longer a student, but I taught Blake Corum in my class at Michigan last year. A great young man who, you know, answered every challenge, busted his butt in my class, and I could see why he's being successful on the football field. And then Hassan Haskins, dating back to the 2019 season, we saw him against Illinois, saw him against Notre Dame. I have been a, you know, really, really advocated for Hassan to get a greater opportunity. Thought he should have been clearly the guy last year. Now we're starting to see that. And so as a fan, putting some perspective, hey, we didn't have football the right way last year. Hey, you know, look at that crowd that they had at Michigan Stadium. Yes, they won the game. This is a game that I predicted them to lose in the preseason. So to see all that, to watch how they dominated this team, on both sides of the ball, really, because it wasn't just the offensive line and the running game. You know, that defense until late in the fourth quarter really had their way with that Washington offense. And so I sat back there, and there was a good portion of me that said, this is pretty cool. This is fun to watch. The opening drive of the third quarter, you know, they ran the ball, I think, 8 consecutive times, just ran right over Washington. To see the big plays out of Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins, that was exciting to see. I can't tell you the last time I felt this good about the running game. I mean, even the Caron Higdon, Chris Evans days, I think you really have to go back. I mean, goodness, I mean, I love Mike Hart. Everybody as a Michigan fan loves Mike Hart, but he didn't really have a number two guy as capable as Hassan Haskins or Blake Corum, depending on who you say is number two right now. So you have to go way back, maybe the Chris Perry, B.J. Askew days of 2002, the last time you had this type of duo that was this capable when one guy went out. So that to me is really exciting as a Michigan football fan, and I'll tee that up for you to come back at me with the passing game question.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, my response after the game to it was like, look, Michigan was a 2-4 football team last year. They came and they dominated an opponent on the ground. At the end of the day, how it looked can't be, or at least to me, shouldn't be your first, but you're happy with the victory. Then after that is concern about whether they will be able to throw the ball to win when they have to. Concern about that is fair. Yeah. That's a fair question to have based on what we've seen so far. But is that your overriding feeling, emotion, sentiment, thought? Is that your first thing coming out of the game? For a lot of fans, it was. It wasn't that they won the game. It was, they threw for 42 yards or whatever it was, which, hey, like, they're going to have to throw the ball. No, the rubber's going to meet the road. But in that particular game, they had a recipe. They used the recipe before them, I think, that they felt most comfortable with to win that contest.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I would agree with you that in the immediate aftermath, during the game's going on, there's definitely some push and pull, a little bit of, like, why are they not throwing the football more? When they do throw the football, it's essentially a screen pass or a pass in the flat. You know, the one thing about that I take a little bit of issue with is when Jim Harbaugh and people say, like, well, you know, they played, they went after Washington's weakness and they played to their strength. Well, pretty early on in the game, it became clear that throwing the ball to the flat, those Washington cornerbacks were blowing up the Michigan wide receivers, and they weren't blocking very well. So if you know that, and the whole thing is about strength versus weakness, then you should have identified pretty quickly that that was a weakness and don't run that play anymore or don't throw there. And they kept on going to it. You know, after the game, I mean, you're an analyst. I'm an analyst. Iris analyst. You know, you guys are obviously, you guys are a great show. I still think like a sports reporter. I still think like a sports talk show host. I have many conversations with people afterwards. Some that are just 100% like, hey, they did exactly what they needed to do to beat Washington. All about is beat Washington, beat Washington, beat Washington. If that is 100% where your focus was on Saturday, whatever you have to do to beat Washington, the team in front of you, then I don't have any problem with the offensive game plan. Where I take issue and where I think a lot of Michigan fans take issue is, and during the broadcast, you know, you guys are up in the booth, so you probably didn't see this, but during the broadcast, you know, they pointed to that sign inside Schemmler Hall that says, what have you done today to beat Ohio State? And I know because you have reported on it, both Sam and Ira talked about it on your website, you know, that Michigan this year, more so than any year of the Jim Harbaugh era, has placed such a great emphasis on Ohio State, where you have players talking about Ohio State, even in game weeks where they're not playing Ohio State. And what are we doing to prepare for Ohio State? And now it came out this week that there's an Ohio State drill that Michigan is doing, some 9 versus 7 or something like that. And so there's this incredible emphasis on what are we doing every day to beat Ohio State. And being a one-dimensional offense ain't it, okay? That is my issue with the game on Saturday, is if this whole thing is about more than just one game, if it is about leading up to Wisconsin in 3 weeks, Wisconsin has the number 3 rush defense in college football right now and made Penn State beat them through the air. And Penn State is one of the best defenses in college football right now, and Michigan State is showing to be a pretty good defense right now. We'll see a lot more this week against Miami. Rutgers in 2 weeks is showing to be a pretty good defense right now. Again, I don't know about the caliber of the competition, but at least on paper, they're number 30 in the country in total defense. So you're not going to win those games by being a one-dimensional offense. You're not going to win those games by playing the playing offense like it's 1975 and you're just going to run over people. So to me, that's the concern coming out of that game is, okay, if it's just about Washington, that's one thing. But if you're talking about preparing your team for future opponents, Michigan did a very poor job last Saturday doing the other things that it needed to do to be successful down the road, if that makes sense.
We're talking to Mike Spaff this morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com in our Inside the Huddle segment. So two things, Mike. Ohio State is having, through 2 weeks, a hell of a time stopping the run. Minnesota was running it down their throats. Oregon was running it on them. Growing the run game to a point where you can ram it down people's throats does help for, you know, help your goal of beating or getting good enough to beat Ohio State. But to your point, because I don't disagree, look, I think Michigan is going. It's going to happen. They're going to be in a position where the quarterback has to be the catalyst. The passing game has to be the reason they win. Some team is going to put them in that position, and they have to get prepared for that. But you mentioned, you know, they're throwing these bubbles, these swings. You know, those are reads. And you could, as we talked to Devin about this. We're going to talk to Al a little bit about it later. If you look at the early play sequencing, they were throwing it. They were calling pass plays early in the game. And, you know, some of those reads, whether it was a, you know, reading a coverage late or holding on to the football, waiting for a guy to get wide open as opposed to anticipating him being open, or, you know, going to a swing when they had the defense for that. It was one of those games where, you know, I don't know if it was the big game atmosphere for Cade McNamara, but after the game and going back over the film, you can see that they made a decision or Josh Gattis made a decision probably around the second quarter. It's like, hey, no. We're running this all the way because we aren't going to try to throw the quarterback into rhythm like we did with Joe Milton. That's me speculating right there. I don't know that he said that. I'm just speculating. I know last year they were in situations where this doesn't look good. The throws look off. I don't know. They kept going to the well instead of running the football. And he said he was going to lean on the running game more. I think this is maybe the first real instance of that coming to the fore. You got a quarterback who isn't as sharp as you know he can be, and you're playing an opponent that we aren't good enough to say we're definitely going to roll over this team. Let's run the football to make sure we win the game. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly one of the arguments that has come out of there. And, you know, I did that Monday morning quarterback with Devin for a couple of years. I'm so glad you guys are using him. He is excellent. You know, his future is so bright. He told me a couple of months back, gave me a preview that he was going to be a college football analyst for Fox, and sent me a real nice message about putting him on the air for the first time. I'm so glad. He is such a good guy, and he's a really good, really nice, does a really nice job of breaking it down and putting it into layman's terms. And I think it's kind of ironic that you got both him and Al Borges, because they work together not always super well, those offenses, and would love to see those guys be in the room together and see if they can complement each other and talk about offense. But, you know, Sam, to your question about Cade McNamara, and, yeah, I mean, if it was more about early in the game, they looked at it and said, he's kind of got, I don't want to say the deer in the headlights, but he just ain't seen the field, he ain't seen the progressions the way we need him to. Oh, man, like, that's bad news. Like, that's not good, right? I mean, it's a young man who I totally understand. This is his third career start, and so you don't write a kid off. You don't write someone off. But, I mean, one of the things that we've talked about with Cade, and I think I actually talked about it on this show last week, was these are the type of games if you're gonna mention that he doesn't maybe have the physical talent that a J.J. McCarthy has, but what does he have? And one of the things that we argued he did have was the intangible qualities, the leadership. Jim Harbaugh said he makes everybody around him better. You know, those are the type of games where a young man, even as a redshirt freshman, even in his third career start, again, we're kind of, I don't say stereotyping here, but those are the kind of games that he's supposed to excel in. Those are the games he's supposed to be, like, most comfortable, because that's what he brings to the table. So, I don't know. I guess I'll be very curious to see this week and the week after that against Rutgers, how quickly they try to get him into a rhythm, throw the football more. You know, Wisconsin looms in a couple of weeks. I hear the argument about Ohio State, though. We have seen Ohio State look mortal in early part of the season before, and then they get to Michigan, they look like an entirely different team. And so, you know, that's a long way down the road for me to say, like, well, Michigan's definitely going to be able to run the football on them. I look more so what's in front of Michigan the next couple of weeks, and that Wisconsin run defense is consistently, traditionally, a great run defense, appears to be, again, this year, a great run defense. And so you look at these next two games, and really this one, because Rutgers is presenting some challenge, and you say, okay, maybe this is the game. You got to get Cade McNamara in a better place mentally. You got to get this passing game in a better place mentally, so that if you go into that Wisconsin game and they do stop the run, you can do something about it as an offense with the passing game.
Absolutely. All right, we'll call this halftime. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and joining us, as he does every single Wednesday, to talk Michigan, to talk college football, talk beyond Michigan as well, which we'll do a little bit here, is Mike Spath for our Inside the Huddle segment. So Michigan, they go out, they get the victory, they're 2-0 on the season. I think everyone expected for Ohio State to be 2-0 on the season. Oregon went to Columbus, no Kayvon Thibodeau. Makes it even less likely that the Ducks would be able to pull out a victory there. And they go there and they get it done. They get it done in an impressive fashion for the second straight week. A lot of questions about the Buckeye defense. And when asked, basically when asked to give his defensive coordinator a vote of confidence, Mike, Ryan Day refused to do so publicly. He said, this is not what we do at Ohio State. Basically, you're putting the train tracks right over Kerry Combs. What do you make of that scenario? Do you think Kerry Combs makes it to the end of the season?
Well, does he make it to the end of the season? I guess it depends if they improve their defense significantly. Now, if you look at their next couple of games, I think they have a high school team that they might be playing this weekend. And then they get, they get Rutgers. I mean, the next, three or four games, they have a pretty light schedule. The weaker teams in the Big Ten East, maybe Ira could pull the schedule up and remind me here. I know I looked at it on Saturday after they lost to Oregon. So I guess it depends on how quickly he gets better. But, if they lose another game before they get to Michigan, I would suspect that there will be some panic and like, hey, everything comes down to that Michigan game, and we got to be in the best position to win, and we're not in the best position with Kerry Combs as our defensive coordinator. Certainly, if they were to lose the Michigan game, I mean, heads will roll. Like, that just you don't win whatever they've won in a row now, 10 games, 9 games in the rivalry, and get to lose that game without somebody getting tossed. Ryan Day, I mean, every coach is a little bit different in how they handle reactions and comments to the media and things of that nature. I can't imagine he said anything to the media that he didn't say personally to Kerry Combs. I can't imagine that Kerry isn't already thinking those things. I've got to get this completely turned around. So it was a great game to watch. College football on Saturday, that opening salvo was so much fun, just not only from a outcome standpoint of watching the Buckeyes go down, but just from an entertainment standpoint, and watching two great teams go at each other, and certainly seeing what Oregon could do to Ohio State, both in the air and certainly with their ground game, and the play that they ran near the goal line, where they scored 3 touchdowns on, was a thing of beauty. And I joked with on Twitter, and my wife had said that I would get 12 straight hours of college football this past Saturday, from 12 to 12. It didn't quite happen. John woke up, and I wanted to spend some time with him, so went to the park, but not until after. I mean, like, it was late in the game, and he was awake, and he was kind of, like, clamoring for daddy, and I think I might have failed the daddy test here, because I was like, John, I'll be with you in 5 minutes. This game is not yet over with, son. And I don't really want – I mean, if he's going to watch a football game, he's going to watch Michigan. He's not going to watch Ohio State, even though I could have indoctrinated him a little bit to the how good it feels to watch your rival lose. But it was just a great football game. Great football game. There's a lot of games this weekend that, whether you got Alabama and Florida, Penn State and Auburn, the Michigan State-Miami game. There's a lot of intriguing games this weekend, too. I just love it, man. 2 weeks into college football season, and it has been everything that we were waiting for and more.
All right, so I guess the thing that struck me about Kerry Combs, you know how coaches are. Yeah, they say, I know they go after each other a lot, head coaches, especially after their assistants, behind closed doors. But to so publicly, basically put him out there for as the guy, as the reason, as the, to lay the fault at his feet to the media, essentially, is different. And it, maybe he wouldn't fire Kerry Combs during the season, but I could see him promoting, say, an Al Washington to defensive play caller over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a unique way of scapegoating. It also shows you just how crazy high the expectations are in Ohio State. I mean, you lose a game 35-28 to what is now a top 4 Oregon team, and, you're 2 weeks in the year and you're talking about firing people. That's incredible that's the level of expectations. And yet, when you look at, how few games they've lost the last 5-10 years, you can understand a little bit of the panic setting. And I think the concern for Ohio State is that it's not going to get any better, and that they're going to face other teams down the road here who are going to challenge them and are going to have some success. And, I think there's probably a little bit of an overreaction going on in Columbus that they're going to lose like 2 or 3 games this year. I mean, they're still so superiorly talented to every team that they play on their schedule, including Michigan, just because if you look at the recruiting rankings, that I don't know how many legitimate threats there are to beat them the rest of the season. But yeah, if I was Kerry Coombs, I might have, you know, I might be telling my, you know, my wife, like, hey, might want to be, you know, cleaning up the house, getting it ready to put the house on the market here, because I don't know that we're going to be in Columbus very much longer.
All right, so speaking of firing, we're talking to Mike Spath here for a couple minutes more here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. So Clay Helton fired at SC. No Paul Feinbaum. Jim Harbaugh's name won't even remotely come up, even though some caller asked that question, and he didn't say, this is a ridiculous question. He just used it as an opportunity to take shots at Jim. But a name that's more realistic, it seems, James Franklin, right? His name is getting a lot of buzz. I'm curious what you think about that. Luke Fickell is another name getting a lot of buzz due to his ties to the AD. But then Mike, Urban Meyer's name is coming back up.
Yeah.
Urban's coached like one game in the pros, that he's a candidate at SC. Do you buy that? What do you think about the SC coaching position?
Well, I mean, I still think it's one of the premier coaching positions in college athletics. I mean, the recruiting opportunities, you know, if you can become the head coach at Texas, Florida, Miami, Florida State, USC, I mean, those are the three best states in the country for football talent. And so, and you look at the resources that they have at Southern Cal, and, you know, they let Clay Helton go for quite a bit longer than I thought they were going to be. I don't want to compare them to the Lions, who let you fumble and bumble your way to you know, a decade worth of losing. But, you know, certainly I think there's a little bit more of a leash there than I would have expected. I mean, James Franklin is interesting. You know, I think many of us in the Big Ten, and certainly Michigan fans, even though right now he has a even record against Harbaugh, I think they're both 3-3. I think we think that James Franklin is overrated because he's a poor in-game coach, and he doesn't seem to always get the best out of his talent. I mean, maybe, you know, a lot of people say the same thing about Jim. He's recruited really well, and because he recruits really well to Penn State, you certainly think, like, my goodness, if he could go out to USC and recruit there, you know, he could be signing top five classes, top three classes, like the old Pete Carroll days. So I think it's a distinct possibility. If I was USC, I'd be looking at it. I think the Urban Meyer thing is just, I'm not going to say it's a pipe dream for them. I think it's a realistic possibility that he flames out all the talk that has happened so far with Jacksonville, how he's treated players, that he doesn't understand the difference between the college ranks and the pro ranks, which is a pretty consistent argument when coaches go from one to the other. I mean, that's what they, you know, the whole thing that happened in Cleveland with John Beilein. We love John Beilein. We don't think, certainly I don't think what happened in Cleveland was John Beilein's fault, but there's a hard transition from college to the pro ranks. Some guys are just great college coaches. Urban Meyer, probably just a great college coach. And so if things are starting to unravel there in Jacksonville, you know, he could pull a Nick Saban and go, hey, my best fit here is in college. And by the way, just like Saban that walked from Miami Dolphins into Alabama, my God, I can now go to USC. I was curious at the timing of firing Clay Helton. The only thing I can think of is literally that they want to get the biggest head start on this coaching carousel that's going to take place. I don't really know if they needed to do it after two games. They probably could have done it after eight games and seen if he could bounce back a little bit. I don't really like that idea of firing somebody after two games, especially because you had the entire offseason. You could have fired him last year and made a push for Urban Meyer, made a push for Matt Campbell, and made a push for James Franklin. So I don't get the two games in and firing somebody. But it'll be interesting because every time Jacksonville loses a game, every time there's turmoil down there in South Florida, there's going to be a question about Urban Meyer and USC. And man, it's going to be intriguing as a side note. I'm not going to pay that much attention to it. I'm much more focused on the games in front of us. But if you like drama, then probably just go subscribe to one of the USC sites or pay attention to that as much as possible. Put on your Google alerts.
Well, great stuff as always, Mike. It's, you know, our next chat will be coming off of that Northern Illinois game. And really, I think, and no one is really expecting Michigan to to lose that game. It's more a question of how they go about winning it. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to work on their passing game, or if they do work on their passing game more in that contest. So we'll see. We'll talk about it next week, man. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks for having me as always, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. That was Mike Spath inside the huddle. With that, folks, we need to get to a break. When we come back on the other side, it'll be time for the recruiting roundup, time of the show where we give you the latest and the greatest in football and or basketball recruiting, and take your recruiting questions at this time and this time only at 734-998-1050. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket.